It's time for the truth, without the spin, without the bias, without the political correctness. Get that every day at deannewman.org. Here's your host, Dan Newman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to deannewman.org. Today's podcast will open up a brand new week, Sunday, June the 3rd, and you may have read the first two parts of our series underway, Political Corruption, Washington, D.C. for Sale. Well, in part one, we defined political corruption, gave multiple examples of political corruption from long ago, and yesterday, part two, we took it one step further. Today, folks, there's a lot more on the table. We're going to Washington, D.C. for Sale, Political Corruption, part three. Let's get started. We'll go to the very top. Joe Biden and John Kerry, former vice president, former senators, John Kerry, in addition to being a senator, Secretary of State, both under President Barack Obama. They were deeply involved in trade and security talks together and separately with China, even as that country began its aggressive campaign to expand its military and physical presence in the South China Sea. You may have heard they built some islands out there that are really creating some havoc in the southeastern part of the Asian continent. Countries there just really don't like what's going on, and it's something that I don't believe the world's ever had to deal with. Contrary to standard diplomatic practice, however, both Kerry and Biden played good cop, not seriously confronting China on its misbehavior during the last 4 years of Barack Obama as president. Biden and Kerry were close friends from their years spent together in the Senate, so there was little surprise when Biden's son, Hunter, and Kerry's stepson, Christopher Hines, you'll remember that name, Hines, he is one of the heirs to the Hines ketchup fortune. They went into business together in 2009, right after Barack Obama was elected president. They created a number of equity and real estate investment firms allied to Rosemont Capital. Now, remember that name, because it's going to come up in the coming months on Capitol Hill. Rosemont Capital, the alternative investment fund of the, guess who? Hines Family Office. Over the next 7 years, as both Joe Biden and John Kerry negotiated sensitive and high-stake deals with foreign governments, Rosemont Capital entities secured a series of exclusive deals with those same foreign governments. In December of 2013, Biden traveled to China for talks. By the way, he took Hunter Biden along with him. While there, the senior Biden soft-pedaled China's clear aggression in Asia and played up the bilateral trade partnership. That's the political piece that, it's kind of like holding a right hand up in the air saying, hey, we're going to talk about trade, bilateral trade, while in the left hand, they're dealing under the table. 10 days after the trip concluded, China's central bank, the Bank of China, set up a $1 billion investment joint venture called Bohai Harvest RST. And for the record, the RS in that name referred to Biden's son's firm, Rosemont Seneca. Months later, in July of 2014, Secretary of State John Kerry traveled to China again, also for talks. Kerry talked little of China's clear aggression, but did conspicuously note that, quote, China and the United States represent the greatest economic alliance trading partnership in the history of humankind. In the ensuing months, Chinese government-linked firms took major stakes in several of the firms owned or controlled by Hunter Biden and Chris Hines and provided them with massive funding totaling billions of dollars. Nepotism at the highest level. You've never heard about that. And this isn't new, folks. Hines and Biden, the younger, are not the first politically connected biological sons of people in office to take advantage of this. Obviously, political corruption. Let's move on. There was the new Black Panther Party. You'll probably remember this. Maybe you've forgotten it. During Bush, that's W, during W's administration, career and line prosecutors at the Department of Justice prepared a prosecution of a group called the New Black Panther Party for crimes including voter intimidation. You'll remember that picture. You remember there were two of these New Black Panther Party members standing on the outside of a suburban Philadelphia voting precinct on election day. They were in full military Black Panther garb, and they both carried bats. Talk about intimidation. On assuming office, Obama and his new Attorney General Eric Holder promptly shut down the case. The Civil Rights Commission's investigated and in 2011 issued a scathing report. Jennifer Rubin summarized the findings in the Washington Post, and we're quoting it here. The new Black Panther Party case brought by Career Justice Department employees was meritorious on the law and the facts. There is voluminous evidence of the Obama administration's political interference in the prosecution of the new Black Panther Party case. There is ample evidence that the Obama administration directed Justice Department employees not to bring cases against minority defendants who violated voting rights laws or to enforce a provision requiring that states and localities clean up their voting rolls to prevent fraud. And of course, it was a massive scandal. I'm sure you heard about the retribution and how the government, when there was a new Justice Department that came to town, how they stepped back in and took action to clear this up and to prosecute those that really impacted the voting system. And of course, you know, right now, election and voting tampering is a really big deal, right? And so you haven't heard? You haven't heard about the government stepping in, the DOJ, opening that case back up? What have you heard? You know what I've heard? Crickets. Then there's the IRS. In the run-up to the 2012 election, the IRS delayed the granting of tax-exempt status to pro-life and Tea Party groups with the clear purpose and effect of suppressing the ability of those groups to participate in the political discussion relating to a presidential election. From this collection of Obama-era scandals, pro-life and Tea Party groups were deliberately targeted for extra scrutiny, their tax exemption applications outrageously delayed until after the 2012 elections without actually being refused. In the follow-up scandal, IRS officials brazenly lied about having backups of relevant computer data. Remember this one? You heard just a very little about it. The American people were expected to believe that multiple state-of-the-art hard drives all failed at the same time in different offices all over the United States and were instantly shredded instead of being subjected to data recovery procedures. Scandal kingpin Lois Lerner got to enjoy her taxpayer-funded retirement and is still doing so after taking the fifth to thwart lawful congressional investigation. Now, you know, we're in the middle of an investigation of Russian collusion by the Donald Trump campaign during the 2016 campaign. Russian collusion in the election. This one, the Loretta Lynch IRS deal, along with Lois Lerner, was definitely, no doubt about it, folks, obstruction of justice. You, like me, are probably sick of the political corruption in Washington, D.C. There's been a lot of it. We've talked about a lot of it. But guess what? You need to sit tight. There's a whole lot more. We'll be back with more right after this at dnewman.org.
Hi, Tom Baudet. Of all the things invented in 1962, some have faded away, like cassette tapes, and others are still very much with us, like lava lamps and Motel 6. Yep, Motel 6 is celebrating 50 years of giving travelers a good night's rest and saving you more for what you travel for. But we're just getting started. In fact, the longer you watch us, the better we get. Kind of like a lava lamp. Trippy. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6. 50 years and the light's still on.
Don't ever miss a story or podcast. Get an email link to every new story and podcast by entering your email address on the homepage of dnewman.org. If it's relevant, you'll get it here.
And boy, is today's story relevant to today's Washington, D.C. political corruption. Washington, D.C. for sale, part three, and let's move on. Let's move forward to a combination of partners and some more political corruption, Loretta Lynch and Eric Holder in the Obama Department of Justice. The Department of Justice under President Obama looked at dozens of prosecutions of the biggest banks, mostly on very thin charges of allegations, with complete confidence that the banks would never take a case to trial. They didn't want to go get exposed in a public setting. The correct word for the process was shakedowns. Listen to this. And you probably haven't heard of this. This one will blow your mind. Something like $100 billion was collected in total by Loretta Lynch and Eric Holder, the Department of Justice, in this incident. Here's how it happened. As an example, a settlement by Citibank with Fannie and Freddie for that's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, for $968 million for losses during the 2008 financial crisis, even though it was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that had set the terms of the loans. These are home loans, government-backed insured home loans. And another settlement by Bank of America for $2.8 billion for essentially the same thing, and the settlement of those two plus five other banks for $8.5 billion for alleged improper documenting of mortgages. It's called robo-signing. 10 settlements by J.P. Morgan with various federal agencies between 2011 and 2013. All of them were over $50 million, and a couple were over $1 billion. In September of 2013, it was a $920 million settlement with J.P. Morgan over trading losses that should have been none of the government's business. In August of 2014, it was a settlement with Bank of America of $17 billion for, supposedly, failing to have third-party loan-level due diligence as to loans going into securitization deals. Then they put provisions into the settlement agreements, allowing the settling banks to get credit on their settlements by contributing large amounts of money to a favored list of Democrat-supporting groups. In other words, Eric Holder on the phone. Hey, buddy. Hey, J.P. Morgan. Hey, Bank of America. You owe the federal government $20 billion, but we're going to give you a deal. We'll cut it in half. You'll only pay $10 billion. Oh, but by the way, five of it goes to the Department of the Treasury. The other five, it goes to this particular not-for-profit and that particular not-for-profit, and that's how you get the credit for it. And of course, all the not-for-profits were favored Democrat-supporting groups. Kimberly Strassel in the Wall Street Journal, December 3rd, 2015, said this: the Justice Department is in the process of funneling more than $500 million to liberal activist groups, at least some of which will actively support Democrats in the coming election. It works like this. The Justice Department prosecutes cases against supposed corporate bad actors. Those companies agree to settlements that include financial penalties. Then Justice mandates that at least some of that penalty money be paid in the form of donations to nonprofits that supposedly aid consumers and bolster neighborhoods. The Justice Department maintains a list of government-approved nonprofit beneficiaries. And surprise, surprise, many of them are liberal activist groups. Go figure. The National Council of La Raza, the National Urban League, the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, Neighbor Works America. The transfer, at the behest of the Justice Department, of this vast amount of money belonging to taxpayers to Democrat-supporting groups was in clear violation, actually outright defiance of the provisions of the U.S. Constitution, folks. Not a law that Congress passed. This is the U.S. Constitution. You may have heard this clause when you were taking political science courses in grammar school. Quote, "No money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law." How about that? And then, of course, there's the famous Attorney General Eric Holder Fast and Furious case. You remember that one? Gun walking, or letting guns walk, was a tactic of the Arizona Field Office of the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. You know it as ATF. It ran a series of sting operations between 2006 and 2011 in the Tucson and Phoenix area, where the ATF purposely allowed licensed firearms dealers to sell weapons to illegal straw buyers, hoping to track those guns to Mexican drug cartel leaders and then arrest them. Makes sense. Kind of a sting operation, right? These operations were done under the umbrella of Project Gunrunner, a project intended to stem the flow of firearms into Mexico by interdicting those straw purchasers and gun traffickers inside the United States. The Jacob Chambers case began in October of 2009 and eventually became known in February of 2010 as Operation Fast and Furious, after agents discovered Chambers and the other suspects under investigation belonged to a car club. And of course, that's a takeoff. That name, Operation Fast and Furious, is a takeoff of that great car series, Fast and Furious, on television. Great series, movies. The stated goal of allowing these purchases was to continue to track the firearms as they were transferred to higher-level traffickers and key figures in Mexican cartels, with the expectation that this would lead to their arrest and the dismantling of the cartels. The tactic was questioned during the operations by a number of people, including ATF field agents and cooperating licensed gun dealers. During Operation Fast and Furious, the largest gun-walking probe, the ATF monitored the sale of about 2,000 guns, of which only 710 were recovered as of February 2012. A number of straw purchasers have been arrested and indicted. However, by October of 2011, none of the targeted high-level cartel figures had been arrested, and none since. Guns tracked by the ATF have been found at crime scenes on both sides of the border, in Mexico and in the U.S. And the scene where United States Border Patrol agent Brian Terry was killed in December 2010 found one of those guns that was registered and sold to gun runners in Mexico as part of the Fast and Furious program was at the scene where Brian Terry was murdered. The gun-walking operations became public right after Terry's murder. Dissenting ATF agents came forward to Congress in response. According to Humberto Benito Trevino, former Mexican Attorney General and chair of the Justice Committee in the Chamber of Deputies, related firearms have been found at numerous crime scenes in Mexico where at least 150 Mexican civilians were maimed or killed. Revelations of gun walking led to controversy in both countries, and diplomatic relations were damaged. And of course, we all know what Mexico thinks about our government right now. As a result of a dispute over the release of Justice Department documents related to the scandal, of course, you know, it's going to go to Congress and they're going to have their committees look into it and subpoena records and documents and bring in and get people to testify. But hold on now. Attorney General Eric Holder became the first sitting member during those investigations, the first sitting member of the Cabinet of the United States to be held in contempt of Congress on June 28th of 2012. Oh, by the way, earlier that month, President Barack Obama had invoked executive privilege for the first time in his presidency in order to withhold the same documents that Congress subpoenaed Eric Holder to turn over. Eric Holder thumbed his nose at Congress as did Barack Obama. Boy, it gets deep, folks, and we're not done. Let's look at one more. Barack Obama and National Review magazine, in a story about Barack Obama, Andrew McCarthy made a compelling case that President Obama had to have been personally involved in making the decision not to prosecute Hillary Clinton for misuse of classified information. If you haven't heard or listened closely to any of the corruption stories so far, listen to this one. Now, Andrew McCarthy is a compelling figure, former deputy attorney general. He knows what he's talking about. It seems to him that some of Hillary's transmission of classified information over that famous non-secure server went right to Obama himself at his own secret personal email account. Obama, and I learned a new word. You're going to love this. Obama used a pseudonymous, that's a version of the word pseudonym, a fake name. He used an email account with a pseudonym or a fake name. He had repeatedly communicated with Secretary Clinton over her private, non-secure email account. These emails must have been involved and must have had some classified information in them. If classified information was mishandled, it was necessarily mishandled on both ends of these email exchanges. And you know what that means. If you mishandle classified information, you're committing a felony. Secretary Clinton and President Obama. If Clinton had been charged, listen to this. We all wondered when fired FBI Director James Comey, after in that press conference laying out all the reasons why Hillary Clinton should be charged, when he said she wasn't charged and you can't figure out why, listen to this. Here's your answer. If Clinton had been charged, Obama's culpable involvement would have been part of it. In any prosecution of Clinton, the Clinton-Obama emails would have been in the spotlight. For the prosecution, they would be more proof of willful, or if you prefer, grossly negligent. Of course, he changed that word in there. It would have been his involvement, willful mishandling of intelligence. More significantly, for Clinton's defense, they would show that Obama was complicit in Clinton's conduct, yet faces then and now no criminal charges. That is why such an indictment of Hillary Clinton was never going to happen in an Obama presidency. Folks, we have only scratched the surface of the political corruption that has and is plaguing the government in Washington, D.C., that supposedly belongs to the American people. Unfortunately, evil in the hearts of men and women take frantic hold of those who are consumed by a quest for more power and more money. Those men and women, sadly for American citizens, have found it far too easy to use that power and money to line their pockets and the pockets of those to which they owe for favors given for their political jobs in Washington, D.C. There's more to come on this sad saga. Stay tuned for Washington, D.C. for sale. More to come at dnewman.org. Thank you so much for joining us. Be listening, be watching for more from dnewman.org. So long, everybody.